This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today, Charlotte McDonald and Ross Freeman Levin, St. John's residents agitating for a safer temporary alternative shelter site in their neighborhood. A public hearing on the proposed TAS is coming up Monday, November 4th, and we're going to talk about that a little later in the hour. And you guys, I got to be real with you because this is Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving. I have never gotten to the end of this conversation about the temporary alternative shelter site in St. John's. There is so much on this pizza. So this show is probably not going to be linear, right? So stay tuned. All right. Ross and Charlotte, thank you for being here.
Greetings.
Thanks for having us.
Excellent. Closer to the microphone because...
Closer.
And if you're listening right now, that was your first volunteer instruction, and you're probably a KBOO volunteer right now because you just listened to me talk about the microphones. No, really, you should be a KBOO volunteer. Anyway, Charlotte and Ross, can some... one of you guys describe what is happening with the temporary alternative shelter site in St. John's? And everybody's pointing at Charlotte.
Yeah, not that many people know about it, so I'm glad to be here this morning to inform folks that Portland will be open, the city of Portland specifically, will be opening a 200 person mass temporary alternative shelter site. It's called a TAS for short, and there's actually one already in existence. It's called the TAS 1. It's over at about 14th and Clinton. So it's right in the middle of town. This new one is very far on the edge of town, and people don't know about it, and that's why we're here today.
All right, but go into more of the details.
Okay, great. Like I was holding back, but... Right? Here's what it is going to be. It is described as an experimental mass shelter site. It's experimental because it will combine for the first time RV parking with electric hookups. It will and pods for sleeping in. So every other shelter site so far has segregated RVs and pods. So that's one experimental aspect of it. Second experimental aspect is its location. So it's located at the absolute edge of town. It's actually technically in the Rivergate Industrial Area, which is outside of the residential area of East St. John's. It is north of the Columbia Boulevard. Didn't mean to say that. It's north of Columbia Boulevard, and it's on North Portland Road. So it's on the truck route. The truck route from... North Portland Road is a historic road that it connects Columbia Boulevard to Marine Drive. So, you know what? It's all out in the port, everybody. That's why people don't know about it. Unless you're from St. John's and spend time out in the Rivergate area, maybe you work in the port, then you'd know that area intimately. So myself and my neighbor Ross, we do live out there. So that's why we're here today.
Ross, talk a little bit about how you got involved too. And if you just tuned in, Ross Freeman Levin was a longtime KBOO volunteer and producer. So we're glad to have you back in the air room. But tell us, how did you get involved, and how was this hitting you?
Well, getting involved happened a little bit by chance, which is part of the unfortunate thing that we're experiencing is not getting drawn into the process at an earlier point. And so we had a meeting last week that was the first meeting that what we've been told, they're hoping to have two meetings before this site opens to involve the community. And so this level of involvement, we've known about it happening, but we weren't invited to the process. And so mostly our struggle in our neighborhood has just been to keep our streets accessible while there's ongoing open air drug market, chop shop, drug manufacturing, prostitution. So keeping our neighborhood safe has been a major issue since I moved there 15 years ago. And it's been known by our other neighbor, who I won't name, but he owned the property that we live on before our place was developed. And he's been there a long time, and he says this is kind of the armpit of North Portland, where the cops would go and sit and have lunch at the end of our street and observe what's going on. And they don't do that anymore. So lots of things have gone on that wouldn't have historically. And Columbia Steel is at the end of that street. Well, lots of neighborhood efforts got that stopped, but the pollution is there and it affected a lot of things around us. And then it became a perfect place to shelter vulnerable people, apparently.
Okay, that's funny.
It's sad, actually, because we've, as a neighborhood, fought for safer streets and cleaner air, and we've started to get that, and we aren't there yet. There's a lot of struggle in our neighborhood just for affordability. A new 900-square-foot two-bedroom home. It's called a home. There's nine of them on what used to be a city lot, is $400,000 now. The brand new construction in our neighborhood. So affordable housing, an issue in our neighborhood, safe streets, clean air, all these issues. And, you know, there's people who need shelter, and the city is definitely making an effort to create that, but they're not involving the people who've been really struggling just to keep the neighborhood or to get the neighborhood safe. We weren't asked to participate in this.
There's not been process. Any public involvement in this, is what you're saying.
Up to this point, it's felt like no, we were not invited to the party.
I can exactly tell you the exact dates that we were even slightly involved, and there's so few, it'll take me a quick second to repeat them. One postcard was sent out for a meeting on December 7th, 2023. So that postcard was sent out. We don't know exactly how many, but apparently 1,000 were sent out. And it did get people out to the St. John's Community Center for that single meeting. I think the reason why folks came out to that meeting as well is that it was advertised through the St. John's Neighborhood Associations. There were a number of neighborhood association people there. But it was a lively meeting. The city brought a mediator, and they needed that mediator. who's a great person, Judith Mowry, longtime city mediator. But she was active that night because people were upset. But that was the one meeting. And then since then, 9 months of silence. There was an additional meeting that happened on April 30th. That's a little bit related, but it was not a public meeting. On April 30th, a group of six nonprofits came together to ask for DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, and the Bureau of Environmental Services, which owns the lot that the TAS is going in on, to come together and explain how the site could be safe for housing anyone, because it was a brownfield. And so those six nonprofits that came together, Columbia SLU, Watershed Council, Willamette River Keeper, Friends of Smith and Bybee Lakes, who knows all about that area, because the lot...
It really is. I mean, this is Portland because we live in a great big swamp. I mean, our whole region is a swamp, and that's a beautiful thing. The planet needs swamps, but we sure don't protect them the way we should.
So all these folks were out there because they're environmental organizations, and interestingly, the site, it'll be interesting, Ross, if we tell them where the site is a little bit more so people can visualize this. The site is it's 10505 North Portland Road. So 10505 North Portland Road. It is a site that was empty for many, many years, but has 100 years of history of being an industrial site. It was a shingle manufacturing site, then it became a truck wash, and after all that time, it became a brownfield. A brownfield is a polluted site with lots of toxins
in
the dirt.
It's the chemicals in the soil, yeah.
Yeah, so... because I do kind of keep my finger on the pulse of this stuff, I knew that there was a proposal to put a TAS there. And so I actually tipped off some folks I know who work at these organizations. And so they called for the meeting. At the meeting, basically, it wasn't really a meeting to ask for information or to consult with the environmental groups who know all about the Smith and Bybee largest wildlife area that's right next to. This is actually the... Did you know that Smith and Bybee Lakes is the nation's largest urban wetland?
I learned that recently too.
And we spend a lot of time there. We go there for bird watching. It's an awesome place.
Yeah.
In what Bald is Eagles. Nature-ish. I mean, it really feels like you're in nature, even though it's largely
surrounded by. I want to jump. I'm gonna
surrounded by industry
really quickly because I want to read a little bit from the open letter from residents of East St. John's, October 17th, 2024, to the city. You guys, if you're listening right now, we're 15 minutes deep into this show. We haven't even gotten to the juicy stuff yet. Straight up, but this is what it says: Rivergate is a patchwork of active port and rail yards, fuel and chemical storage, heavy industrial manufacturing, food production, metal recycling, a city dump, and extensive urban wetland wildlife preserve. Like, that's us. That's Portland. We freak me out sometimes. And I also have to jump in here and say, if you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests, Charlotte McDonald and Ross Freeman Levin, St. John's residents agitating for a safer temporary alternative shelter in their neighborhood. A public hearing on the proposed task is Monday, November 4th, and we'll talk more about that. Charlotte, she's just going to...
It's actually the 14th.
14th, right on. Here, we'll get that straight.
We'll get that straight later.
But, I mean... Just to jump in here, one of the things that I've talked with you before about how many of the things that happen in the city of Portland seem to be something that, I don't know, the office manager who was sitting in for the community engagement director took a phone call and pressed a button on a website and then all this rolls out. You understand what I'm saying? It's like the left hand, it's like somebody took this on who was not knowledgeable about what was going on and they did it because of some temporary situation. We see that in City of Portland policy a lot. People who are taking things on, making big decisions that don't have anything to do with reality. We've seen that in the police bureau. But anyway, talk a little bit more about what do you want to see happen in this process?
I put myself in the shoes of the people who are going to be in this place sheltering. And I try and imagine myself needing a place to go grocery shopping, a way to get around if my car's not working. And so the location, Portland Road, is
no sidewalks. There's trucks going back and forth.
It's a really heavily industrial area. You look to the east, it's the water treatment facility. You look to the north, it's that Smith and Bybee wetland and the Columbia Slough. You look to the west, and it's the Columbia Steel site, which is impassable.
And we haven't even talked about that yet. I'm going to have Charlotte talk about a little bit later. That's its own a gigantic planet of an issue, but go ahead, Ross.
Yes. And then you look to the south and it's a truck repair yard, big truck repair yard, and you're at the edge of the city. So I think to myself, if I'm in that place, you know, I'm not here to talk NIMBYism because we all need shelter and I have a heart and I have been homeless. So I know what a person landing there might be thinking. Why am I in the middle of nowhere? So when we went to this first meeting last week, we heard from some of the people designing this, designing the policy around it, and from some of the people looking to run it, Urban Alchemy. And they all have big hearts. They all want to help. It sounds like they're gonna do awesome work. But the hurdles, the barriers, the location is just part of it. And so I'm concerned about people's safety, people's access to a grocery store, people's what the medical response time and the police response time
is,
will be.
So is that area even within the fire department or the police department response areas?
Like that's one of the questions on our list, Lisa. So we came up with that's a really good point, Ross, and I'm absolutely there with you that we are thinking about what would it be like to wake up there and to be there all night and to be there at 4:30 in the morning when the trucks start running really fast at 45 miles an hour speed limit, but we know that people drive a lot faster than that when it's 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning when the truckers are trying to get ahead on their schedule. What would it be like to wake up super isolated? And what I think we've all been, the local people, 20 of us came out, we've all been talking about what it would feel like, the feeling of isolation, the feeling of sort of feeling erased by being put so far out. So we know that we're in a statewide emergency. We know that Every piece of land was looked at over the last number of years to put in the smaller safe rest villages, and it's really hard to find big pieces of land. So they saw this big piece of land, and the city received a large amount of federal funding, $30 million from ARPA, and they thought, oh, this would be great. But Ross and I are here to say, we're privileged to be housed, and we're very grateful. We, even being housed in this neighborhood, know about a lot of crime going on, people struggling all around us. So there's, I'm going to use a funny term, there's kind of a shadow economy, or it's basically an illicit...
A shadow economy in all of our little local neighborhoods where people are...
Yeah, a way to make a living out there. How do you make a living if you're struggling on the streets in our area? We happen to know there's a lot of ways to make a living, and they are going to be affecting the folks that are put out there. So not only is it lonely and isolated, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Ross. It's also putting people in a within arm's reach of a lot of bad choices. And it's not like the Clinton task, which is embraced by services. There's an incredible place right up Powell called the Quest Integrative Health, which is like probably the city's most innovative recovery center. But over here where we are in the East St. John's neighborhood, north of Columbia Boulevard,
and almost the northern part, it's like it's bounded by the river there. So you're not even going anywhere.
There's nothing close by. So that's it. You hear what I'm saying?
It's
about
not even a bus.
You can walk to a bus line that comes, you know, twice an hour sometimes.
How far away is the bus?
It's almost
about a 10-minute walk. So you can catch a bus at Columbia Boulevard a couple of times an hour. But that bus, you have to take it up to another connecting Fessenden line, you know, the 44, the 75. Those will all connect out at Pier Park, which is, again, the very
another
periphery.
Another big place for a shadow economy there.
That's almost 2 miles,
right.
Pier Park.
Yeah. It is a long way away. So the closest groceries are at 7-Eleven, and that's about a 10-minute walk from this site. So they could grocery shop at 7-Eleven, or if they were, you know, on bike, maybe get there in 5 minutes.
Or walk the almost 2 miles to Freddy's.
To Freddy's.
You know, and these are a whole bunch of details that most of the people paying taxes in this city probably don't even think twice about. We don't know what the weather is. We don't even think about, like, how other people live, right? So I want to, you take that piece of information and go to a different aspect of this. It's that it's sort of being snuck in. Like,
yes.
This is a big decision. It's a big deal. The first one went pretty well. And now here's the second one, and people are wondering what's up with that. But this is what I want to say. I want to go back to reading from this open letter from residents of East St. John's. Amid the chaotic lead up to the November 5th election and Portland's government restructure, TAS is an experimental 160-unit mass homeless shelter being pushed through at the city's northern edge with little public engagement. I want to go to the Willamette Week, this week's Willamette Week, where three members of the city council directed the city attorney to draft divorce papers, as they say, from the joint office contract. So sneaking something in. Sneaking something in is something that you do when the mayor is away and Rene Gonzalez is running the meeting. And they're actually proposing a mega, mega policy break, policy shift. And who's there to even pay attention?
Yeah,
and
apparently so we're looking MAPS at, pushed back on that.
Well, which is great. Rock on, Mingus MAPS. But I'm saying this is a time when things are falling through the cracks. We're not sure who's going to wind up even in control of these neighborhoods. Talk about that.
It's going to shift also. So in the midst of the meeting that we were at last week, it's brought to my attention, and maybe they all knew, and they didn't
By
act
they, we
surprised.
Mean city staff?
There were a lot of city staff there.
Yeah, you're right.
There
I just
was
want to
a
know
good
who
number
is.
Of them. Yeah. But the community members, I would say there were 30, at least 30 community members from our neighborhood and surrounding area in our neighborhood. We'll call it St. John's, but that Cathedral Park area, the University Park area, there were people there. And someone brought up that this whole program being developed and rolled out by the city will be turned over to the county at the beginning of next year. And so we know how easily and fluidly these transitions tend to happen, but who are the people who are, so we're talking to the people who are going to be running it for almost 6 months, and then the county will be running it. So in this development process, why aren't we also talking to the people who are going to be running it?
Yeah.
In 6 months.
And well, I think, and I love it that you're reporting about the exact level of knowledge that any of us have. But even what you heard at that meeting is not actually necessarily true, because as Lisa just pointed out, and she read from that Willamette Week article, things are changing on the daily. So even though just last week in the meeting, a neighbor brought up, hey, this is going to change over to joint control with the county, correct? And they said, well, that's in discussion. And then the article that you're reading from today talks about the fact that, yes, just last week or very recently, the Portland Solutions, which was previous mayor's staff that are now running Portland Solutions.
Let's talk
they
about
said,
that. Keep going.
We would like to just go solo. We'd like to split off from the JOA, Joint Office of Homeless Services. We don't even want county support. So what's interesting here, Ross and I are saying, we'd like to be engaged. We can't even talk to who's engaged because they don't know who's going to be in control of it, which makes it really difficult for us to bring the solutions we have. And you know, maybe today we can even talk about some of those solutions. We're here offering, volunteering to bring helpful information that could make this temporary alternative shelter site truly temporary, which it needs to be, because it's not designed to be permanent. It's not a support. It doesn't have, I'm going to call it, naturally occurring services and positive supports. So it can't be temporary. We'd like to be part of the solution. We don't even know who to talk to.
I have to jump in here and say this again. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Charlotte McDonald and Ross Freeman Levin. They're St. John's residents agitating for a safer temporary alternative shelter in their neighborhood. A public hearing on the proposed task is, tell me all the details right now, Monday, November 14th.
Yes.
Is that Monday?
It's not exactly a public hearing, Lisa. It's interesting. It is a public meeting, and yes.
Let's all go, y'all. You listening to me right now? Let's go to this heckin' meeting, because we're paying for, sorry.
It would be great to come. So this second meeting is a meeting that the Portland Solutions office of the current office in control or governing shelter site. It's hard to describe what they are. But Portland Solutions is offering a meeting at the St. John's Community Center on North Central Street at 6:30 in the evening, 6:30 to 8 p.m. on November 14th. So we will all have made it through the election by then, and you will have had a week to rest. So come on out, and this will be to discuss, what does a good neighbor agreement need to have in it?
Oh,
and
here we go. Here's the other thing I've never gotten to. Yeah, like, so there's this, first of all, there's this issue of, what is the process for creating this task? The idea came from don't curse now, Lisa Loving, don't do it. The idea for this came from somebody who's on his way out. And so now you have a whole bunch of people who are also sort of on their way out, and they just want to throw their power around and have some control over something that they won't even be there when it's done. And, let's talk about...
They might be there.
Right
on.
We
don't know.
We want to see. So what is Portland Solutions? What is that little monster, big monster?
Oh, Ross is looking at a web page about it right now, right?
There's a lot to it. It's a complex system that we have within a complex system.
So just within the past couple of years, the city of Portland basically came together and tried to create this superstructure to try to figure this out. It's new, right?
Well, a couple years ago, they created shelter services, and then on July 1st, they created Portland Solutions.
Holy moly,
okay. What does it say on the site?
So it's under portland.gov, and Portland Solutions says, Mayor Ted Wheeler created Portland Solutions, formally established July 1 of this year, so just 3 months ago, okay, to create a centralized program hub to address our community's most pressing homelessness and livability challenges. It brings several programs under one umbrella for added effectiveness and service. So this is a great idea. This is great. And it happened a few months before the end of the mayor's term. And so we hope that this awesome energy, which I think we engaged with at the meeting last week, and this potential, because we all feel this need. We see the struggle and the hurt and the danger that people encounter on the street every day in our neighborhood. And we're inviting potentially 200 people. Hopefully they'll fill it. 200 people to an industrial road on the corner of an industrial lot in a neighborhood with an ongoing crime syndicate of scrap metal, drug distribution, prostitution, and just difficulty that we as a neighborhood already are dealing with.
And also the environmental pollution. We still haven't even talked about what Columbia Steel did and blah, 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 blah. Go ahead.
Right. So some of our neighbors were, before this started happening, there's a vet in our neighborhood who's starting a nonprofit for vets, and he got Columbia Steel to sell at a discount or donate a chunk of their buffer they were required to have when they were operating.
Land. Yeah, like a little hillside buffer.
A green space.
It's a sloped hillside, but it's a
blackberries.
Coolest guy ever. That's the kind of innovation that you're talking about. A really nice guy who said, hey, I want to do something positive with this.
Right. Yeah. So he wants to create veteran services. His landlord is co-facilitating a potential temporary housing for vets. There's great energy here, and Portland Solutions could be a part of that if we were
invited
really
to the table.
Invited and engaged.
Asked.
Yes. I think being asked is a good part of that. And then re-engaging, like the not just invited, but like, okay, this isn't what I do every day. I'm a student at Portland State. Charlotte has a little more experience with this, but all the neighbors should get not a postcard or a flyer or an email, but like real information.
Or how about a survey?
A survey asking what we would like to see happen. But then I would like to see the plan, like the budget. I want to see where the money is going to go and what the plan is if things happen to not go as planned.
Yeah.
The solutions to the potential problems aren't on the table for us to say, oh, that's what you're going to do if things don't go perfectly well. What are their plans? We need to know their plans.
And interestingly, so Ross, you were there on Thursday, October 10th, which surprisingly is 1 week ago. That week went by fast. But you were there that night, and some of the things you just mentioned, Ross, having a plan to react positively when things do go wrong, is what a good neighbor agreement is supposed to do. And that so good neighbor agreements, it's interesting.
Now back to the meeting that's happening November 14th.
Because these two meetings, the one that happened last Thursday on the 10th and the one that will happen in about 3 weeks on November 14th, are supposed to be two meetings to start a good neighbor agreement process. We have already succeeded because we've shown we need more meetings than that. When we arrived last Thursday, the five friendly staff from Portland Solutions said, we're here tonight to discuss the concept of a neighborhood agreement, and next meeting we will bring you a draft that will basically be completed and we'll just move from there. And
we found it
I did stand up and I said, don't let yourself be railroaded into only two meetings. And I looked at everyone in the room and made eye contact, and everyone looked at me like, yeah, we want additional meetings because we'd like to do what Ross just said. We'd like to participate in the same process that every other shelter, Safe Rest Village or TAS, has been offered. And that is a series of however many meetings it takes to create a good neighbor agreement, which is, no, it's not a legally binding contract, but it's the best that our city can come up with.
It's best practices. And the other thing is knowing that the entire city government is, we don't, it might flip, it might stay the same, but we're going to have so many more people at the table. Even people who, on this new city council, who are not from St. John's still, it's going to be a more fulsome brain trust that runs the city. That's my hope. That's,
yay.
It seems like that's what's happening. And even voters even voted that in. So, you know, the fact that so much is going to change, you're just always going to see some status quo, you know, politicians running to the closing line to try to control what they think.
And
is
the,
right.
And no shade here, because I know they meant well, because they want to get to the solution. But someone waved a magic wand at the meeting and said, we, in our last process, it took 6 meetings like this. So we've got so much experience with this. We can get this one done with 2.
Oh,
and it was like, I felt like someone had just like punched me in the face and said, well, we've been here before. We know how to win this and you lose. I was like, no, that doesn't jive here, because that meeting happened in a different place with different conditions, different, everything was different. So why should that different process mean that we get 2 meetings instead of 6?
Thank you so much for saying that. And what's funny is that 6 meeting number, Ross, is even a smaller number than the original 12 meetings and 3 months of discussion they took to engage 6 very large, well-established and well-attended groups when they made the good neighbor agreement for the TAS 1 over the Clinton Triangle. They took 3 months, 12 meetings. They had the 2 neighborhood associations, the Brooklyn Neighborhood Association and the Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association and the Inner East Side Business Association, big, powerful groups, and 2 other nonprofits, well attended, 12 meetings. We are offered 0 neighborhood association involvement, 0 business association involvement. I will give Portland Solutions credit. They did send the email to the neighborhood associations. They even went to the 3 neighborhood associations meetings nearby. But the honest truth is, all of those neighborhood associations are so distant from this location, they decided to not participate. They just thought, well, we don't really know about that area. So they also did invite the St. John's Boosters, which is a business chamber of commerce. On our list, the open letter that's from the neighbors is a really, we're going to give them as much information as we can. We've listed, I think we talked to all the neighbors and made a big list of all the businesses nearby. Because something we haven't talked about, Ross, is how industrial our area is. We have many quite interesting businesses with many workers. So besides residents over here, we have a very active workforce. This is the port of Portland. If you ever think, well, I live in Portland, there's a port in that word.
That includes the airport, too. The airport and the water ports are all run by the Port of Portland. And there's, go ahead.
Yeah, but so we're in the active port area. So, you know, the list includes Green Transfer, which transfers huge amounts of metal up and down the road. It includes 2 scrap yards on the road. One is MTP Scrap Yard. One is Sargent's. It includes a fuel distributor, which is the next business down as you go north from the TAS. It is a space age fuel. Oh, I actually skipped a business, which is I have to add to the list. Oh, yeah, there's a lumber mill and a lumber yard. But did you know there's also a radio station tower over there?
Right.
For KBMS, the you know, wonderful.
We love KBMS.
We love
Black Music Station.
Black Music Station of Portland. Yeah. They haven't been involved at all. The city has not even outreached to a BIPOC-owned radio station whose tower is directly across the slough, is actually as close as any other business to the TAS. It's the next door neighbor to the north. So we are just again saying in a friendly way, we are ready to be a part of this to make everyone's experience better, because the businesses have many solutions to offer as well, and they haven't been invited into the process. So we have a list of, I think it's 13 businesses. And so I personally walked. I enjoy meeting these businesses because I'm fascinated by the incredible riches of this area, of all the different kinds of jobs people
do. Especially the small businesses and some of the people connected to the Willamette River and the Columbia River are fascinating. Complete communities there that often are not, you know, consulted about stuff.
In fact, here's a good one. I didn't tell you this, Ross, I don't believe. So I walked down to a business called Cascade Geosynthetics. And they are just down the road. They're almost all the way to Marine Drive.
Yeah.
So I walked in there and told their owner, incredible woman, about the task site. She said, wow, I had no idea. And that's the same answer I got from every business, honestly. I had no idea.
That's because the people on the Happy Solution staff realized they could do the same job.
They
just
thought,
two meetings.
I do actually, I'm going to continue to tell you about Cascade Solutions real quick. But Cascade Solutions, the woman said, oh, wow, we saw that development going on. And I said, yeah, they capped the site, the whole brownfield site.
We haven't even talked about
they
that.
They capped yet. It with 1 foot of asphalt. And she said, wow, that's crazy because I am in the business of providing products that could have done that for much cheaper. She said, I have all these products that at the big company they run that they could have used instead of putting a permanent 1 foot cap of asphalt, but they never even called me. And I thought, wow, what a bummer.
How much should we pay for that, Charlotte?
Only a dollar or two.
$9 million.
Just for the layer of
Well, I don't know. Asphalt. $9 million for the entire remediation, which actually was quite complex, Ross. I don't know if you know.
It would be great to have access to that information. The environmental survey before the analysis, kind
that
of like
be a public
what are
record.
The to- what, yes, what are the toxins in the ground? What's
do we have to do a Freedom of Information Act?
Well, no, we can. That? Yeah, with that, but it's great that you're asking that, so yeah. We can get it from DEQ. So that
that's the state.
Well, Department of Environmental Quality does. They did. The city was required to do testing. They quickly test. I'll just tell the fast. Would you like to hear the
please
fast do?
Version? I mean, because this issue is a planet. I mean, it's
well,
too
the
big.
Fast version is unlike at any other shelter site in Portland. Every other shelter site, you come in, created a shelter, which are clearly needed. This one, $9 million were spent before even putting the first person on the site because it had 100 years of industrial waste in the soil, you know, built up, and it had a specific toxin called TCE. I'm going to use those three.
Trichloroethylene?
Thank you.
Okay.
Trichloroethylene. And it is no longer even legally for sale in the United States because it's a toxin that was used in all kinds of, it's a surfactant and it's used in washing, but it's very toxic. So they did test the soil. They said, yes, it would be a problem for people to have contact with this soil. So the solution we're going to do is to cap it. And also, because people will be there, they need to have a place for waste treatment. So they put in big underground tanks that can be vacuumed out for, you know,
human waste.
And they also, because it's next to the protected wildlife area and the Columbia Slough, which is actively being remediated itself from toxic sediment, is not okay to swim in the slough. It's not okay to eat the fish out of the slough. They put in some special filter drains so that nothing could go into the slough. But all of that cost $9 million because it's a huge site, and they ran electric to it as well.
And that's where you're coming from, the whole question of temporary alternative shelter site. How do you define the word temporary? And if we're investing $10 million into this totally isolated plot of polluted earth in the middle of the industrial area, what are we going to do with it in the future? And Charlotte, I've heard you also talk about your concern that the city is setting this table for literally a permanent underclass that always lives out there, because there's already hundreds of people who are subsisting in the slough. Right. There's nobody knows actually how many people are out there, but there's already people who are living in rough out there who would not probably even qualify to live in these shelters because there's rules about who can be in there. It's like I just want to know who was the big brain behind this, because I think a whole lot of small brains cobbled it together.
Well, something you just said may actually, it's a low barrier site. So they don't allow drug use on site, mm-hmm. and weapons on site, but they're not being exclusive. They're not saying you have to have kids. They're not saying you can't have dogs. I think I think this is a site that is going to welcome a lot of people who probably can't get in at other places. Plus, people with RVs will be able to be there. Isn't that true?
Yes. At first sight, this is going to have 90 RV parking spaces and 60 pods on the same.
Why did it take years for us to get to that place?
That burns my toast.
You know that? I'm sorry. I just flew off the track.
Yes, I think we're all recognizing the positivity of low barrier can be positive because it allows people to have a step up. There's so many different solutions or philosophies. There's housing first. There's low barrier first. But I think we all agree low barrier can be positive. But like you just mentioned, Lisa, we don't want to create an underclass of folks who are allowed to use, live safely and be housed with a, you know, cooling in the summer, heating in the winter, place to go. But we want more than that. We don't want people to be living completely disconnected outside the city. If this is going to be a temporary alternative shelter site, can we bring in absolutely novel work development resources? It's in an industrial area where there actually are many warehouse jobs, easy to get. And I'm going to bring up another thing that has not even been brought in. We have the Bybee Hope Center.
Oh, I was just going to mention that. There's already a shelter right there.
There's a huge... So this is why people get so frustrated over in St. John's. It's a place where things get dumped, don't get solved, and then a new problem gets dumped again. The previous problem was building a jail that sat for how many years?
Multnomah County built the Wapato Jail, and it was never opened. Yeah, it was more than 30 years.
20. It was quite... Maybe we can find the fact on that, but at least a decade. So this jail sat there, finally got turned into the Bybee Hope Center just a couple years ago. And
20 years.
20 years. It sat there for 20 years. And everyone was aware that it was sitting there for 20 years. Finally got turned into a high barrier shelter. So that's the difference, is that drug use is not allowed in that shelter. That's really, but it's, has many other better things because it is connected with workforce development. It is connected with a lot of programs. It is established. It's indoors, so you're not just out in the elements. So it's got a lot going for it, and we haven't heard if the city, did they mention this at the meeting, Ross? What are they connected at all with the Bybee Hope Center?
See, that's, again, the coordination element really felt to be absent. So I'm thinking that getting more information on the table instead of us just learning about what's possible on this postage stamp, this $9 million postage stamp, and then just to keep it in perspective, $7 million a year is they're operating for 3 years. So it's going to be approximately $30 million. For 3 years, but what's connected to it in other services, and why aren't they all represented here as like a plan? Why wasn't at the meeting? Why wasn't I handed a plan for this is who's going to handle this part of, you know, transportation, safety, etc. So we were given Urban Alchemy, and they were there in force, and they were really invested in making sure that we knew that they're going to be there to serve these people.
I mean, and I don't mean to be rude, but they're getting paid a lot of money for that. But yes. Keep going. I hear
and
you.
And who is Urban Alchemy?
Let's talk about that in a minute.
But the connection between Urban Alchemy isn't going to be the silver bullet. I hate that silver bullet
phrase.
The magic
wand.
The magic wand. They are going to be the first point of contact. So what are the other points of contact and the connections, the interconnections with all the other services like the other shelter in the neighborhood, et cetera. So I just think it's not two meetings. It's not just a plan. It's all those connections. We want to know more because I've been in the neighborhood 15 years. There are people in the neighborhood who've been there 50 years.
I'm sure there are.
And
some of those businesses probably even longer.
100 years and more, yeah. So it's a long-term commitment, I think, that the city needs to make, even if it's just a temporary site, that you can't just say, well, no one's going to see it, no one's going to care,
and I think
because we all really are going to experience the weight of this.
Oh, well, more than that, I mean, and I'm going to say this again, when we talk about this policy around unhoused people, I hear a lot of people saying, you know, they this, we that. I never see it like that. Any of us could wind up there. Any of us could wind up there. Our kids, our parents. It's not an us versus them thing. And that's why, Ross, I just appreciate how uncynical you are. You really have a heart of gold going into this, because my instinct says I don't trust the city of Portland to move a penny from point A to point B adequately. I just don't. And it's because I've been covering this stuff as a journalist for so many years. And I see these random people, like I said earlier, you know, who just got out of college and they just got this job and they have this big idea and they're going to ram it through. And then it doesn't work and they wander away and go, darn, that didn't work. And everybody else is stuck with it. You know, I need to hear more from you, Ross, because I need not to be that cynical person.
We need more substance. It's a terrible trust but verify.
Right.
But how do you verify without data and knowing what the plan was to begin with and all of these things? And I really want to trust them because we did elect them and
the city council members,
interestingly,
and the county
and
representatives.
You know, it's just a matter of, I would trust them more if they opened the door and let us in.
Yes.
I would trust them more.
Lack of transparency.
If we could see in the windows inside the machine and know that what's being fed to the machine isn't poison, because it is a toxic soup out there.
And that's our money.
Well, we're going and to this. The interesting thing is, you and I and the other dozens of people that came out will be involved. They're just getting that picture. In fact, we did get a letter back, got an email back just last week from Hank Smith, the deputy director of Portland Solutions. And in it, did you see that? The last closing sentence was, "We were very surprised to see so many people come out." I mean, they honestly had to pull out a lot more chairs when people kept coming in. And that was great. It was a great moment. And I think it was a wake-up call. So I'm going to try to be as non-cynical as you, Ross.
Yay!
And say that here's an interesting thing I just heard, and this is a way to summarize it. This is a Mark Twain quote, apparently. I'm writing you a long letter because I didn't have enough time to write a short letter. So what does that mean? It means that to design something to be short, to only take 3 years, to be temporary, that takes a lot of work. And they, like Lisa just said, if you have new people coming in without any background, they will not succeed because
that.
They need to know all the specifics of the area. So like I just said, the lady with Cascade Geosynthetics, she could have provided a different solution for the remediation. We've got multiple companies there that might be able to help with better ideas for transportation, for instance. And how about, Russ, not just this Bybee Hope Center, but also the St. John's Village? How about the new We Shine tiny house village that's going in the area? I think it's going to be in Portsmouth. Why don't you consult with those other leaders in housing solutions to really network in with this large mass camp? And we're saying this is a mass camp, and we've been using the number 200. It's actually going to be 160 sites, but it's
160 people.
You can have more than 160 people. You can have up to 200. Because you can allow couples to stay together, which is great. I'm using the 200 limit because, interestingly, there may be, if anyone out there in the community wants to look this up and provide this information back to KBOO, that'd be great. Supposedly, in the state of Oregon, there's a limit to a size of a camp, and that limit was set after the Japanese internment camps, that only 200 people per camp maximum is allowable in the state. Now, I may be wrong about that, but I am certainly correct that when Sam Adams in February 2022 said he was going to create camps of 1,500 people, five of them, to just quickly solve the homeless problem, that he was making stuff up. He was just making stuff up. So let's bring in these people that run smaller camps, or not camps, smaller shelter sites, including Weishan, including St. John's Village, even the Bybee Help Center. Let's get them over here to help this place.
And I think we all are probably head spinning $30 million in 3 years. Like, it's one of those use it or lose it kind
of. No, hire me. I'll do it all for half that.
Right.
I will.
Right. Well, so they were told, you got this much time, you got this much money, use it or lose it, is my guess. Right. That's my guess. But what's on the other side of the 3 years? So this temporary site, $30 million. Can we see this $30 million bridge landing somewhere?
Yeah.
Or is it a bridge to nowhere? What happens in 3 years?
Is it a stairway to heaven?
I bet it won't be, but still.
Is part of this expenditure landing somewhere? Or is it really just a way to spend $30 million?
And say you did something. And it's intractable, couldn't do it, but we spent $30 million, so we did something.
Some of that land a bridge to somewhere that isn't temporary?
Yeah.
I love that thought. We're running out of show. I want to go back to, what exactly do we want listeners to do about this issue?
There's two things. I think we missed one exciting thing we just found out about. There's two events people can go to. One, we were just sent an email last week that on the 4th, November 4th, the day before the election, this temporary alternative shelter site on 10505 North Portland Road will be open for a walkthrough. People can walk through it. So come on down, everybody. Come and see what we're talking about. And come find out why when we say industrial area, you'll know it. What it is. And then the second thing is, you can get questions answered there on that day. Then on November 14th at 6:30 p.m. at the St. John's Community Center, 6:30 to 8 is another meeting to specifically, not rabble rouse, it's a meeting to come and say, we are happy to schedule this good neighbor agreement. Let's start talking about where we're going to have the meetings, how they need to be virtual meetings, I want to see that the city has had one-on-one meetings with every business on this list. Swan Island Sheet Metal, Blue House Fitness, Union Pacific, Space Age Fuel, MTP Towing. I could go down the list.
It's interesting because usually we're talking about grassroots involvement, but this is actually business involvement.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
So that's why this is different. So we're going to come in and say, no, we're not here to yell. We're here to say, here's who needs to be involved. Let's design the meetings. Should we do it at a church that's closer? Because it's actually more than a mile. It's quite a ways to the community center. Let's just come on the 14th and bring ideas and demand to have a good neighbor agreement, the most unique one ever so far, because it's the most unique site.
It will be. Is there any place online people can go for this information? Not really.
No, there's nothing. There's no
City
information.
City Portland is not really doing
yet.
This.
And so that would be the second
really
question.
A public meeting.
Let's get these should be meetings for locals. There are 15,000 people in St. John's, so we should be able to get plenty of people out.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think it's a bad idea to do your research, because there is so much information. Do research and bring what you find. Make your phone calls. Maybe you'll find the right person on the other end of the phone at the city or the county or the state who's going to shed light on some of these dark areas that we're unaware of, and you can illuminate them and bring that information to this meeting, because it's really an opportunity for a neighborhood and our community to come together and come up with solutions for our homeless friends, neighbors, family, our community.
Ourselves, right? Anyway, I just want to thank you so much for being here, and I want to bring you back on the air after this is all said and done, and we can sit around and wonder what the heck just happened. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yay!
It's been good.
If you're listening right now, this is Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving, and it's stories like this, it's issues like this that this show exists for, okay? Special thanks to the incredible KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio is open, and the airwaves are waiting for you. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming at this radio station by going online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Come join us at the station Friday, November 1st for KBOO.